This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Japan Pro Wrestling's first ever headlining event in America. Tickets sold out in a mere 2 hours. A fighting style world-renowned set the crowd alight. And now, in 2018, ever-evolving New Japan Pro Wrestling has its sights set on the world, and America is next.
That New Japan Pro Wrestling will return to the United States in 2018.
New Japan is coming. It's going to be bigger. It's going to be better than ever. We will rule the wrestling world.
This is Strong Style Evolved.
Wrestling Omakase, episode number 39. We are coming to you live on location from the Hotel Current in beautiful Long Beach, California. That's right, it is our live thoughts episode of watching DDT Judgment from the confines of this hotel room. Sean, what were your thoughts on Colt Cabana versus Joey Ryan?
It was certainly a match that happened. Like, it was one of those situations where this... It was psychology. It was psychology that made sense within its own strange world of psychology. I also don't know how Joey Ryan had room to stuff 3 lollipops down his trunks, but maybe his little compartments in the trunks. I don't know, but...
I like that you just went with that. That was good. But no, we're actually here to talk about Strong Style Evolved, which we attended live. Sean, why don't you introduce yourself? You're a now 3-time returning guest?
3-time.
3-time.
Sean 3K.
Sean 3K.
Well, yeah, no, I'm Sean at the Dragon Suplex on Twitter. I know that's at the end, but that's what most people know me for. I write for Voices Wrestling, doing mostly Joshi and Stardom stuff, but I'm actually commenting on men's wrestling today for the first time in on a podcast form. So looking forward to that, and thought it was a great show.
Yeah, it was a really good show. That's basically, I guess not to spoil things, but the... You know, for a while, it kind of felt like we were watching a Corican, except in a way bigger building and in America. But I would say, like, the last 3 matches really, like, put over the top to be a show that I felt, more than worthwhile, you know, coming out here and making the trip. It's a long trip out from New York, but, I mean, I don't mind being on planes. I really don't give a shit. And airfare from New York to L.A. is actually a lot cheaper than people think.
Yeah, it was so. A lot better than I thought it was. Spent most of yesterday in Little Tokyo in K-Town. That was pretty sweet.
But... Yeah, you've never been out here. I've been to L.A. twice. We had some adventures yesterday. It was a good time.
adventures, he says.
We got like propositioned by a very tiny elf to go to her Hyrule castle party.
She was concerningly young. That was not good.
There is there's this like basement in Little Tokyo where there's these like five or six like different anime stores like all in the same little like owned by the same company I think is runs out of Tokyo, also runs out of Japan. And first of all, it's like heaven for two weeaboos like us. It was really cool stuff. I bought some random Hatsune Miku stuff. It was really cool. We have nothing like that in New York, I have to say. Like, there's a store called Image Anime that really kind of sucks. Like, I go there because it's pretty close to my job, and I go there from time to time, and they never have anything interesting, and it's not that big. And there's, like, Kinokuniya, which is okay, but there's nothing like that. That was, like, pretty giant. Like, it was like they took a little slice out of Akiba and, like, put it in the middle of Los Angeles. I hear it's, like, in San Francisco there's even more stuff.
Welcome, everyone, to Weeaboo Omakase. I'm your host, Sean Williams, alongside John Carroll.
But there were these girls standing out there handing out these flyers for a Hyrule Castle party the following weekend.
It's at a maid cafe, for the
record. Yeah, it's like a maid cafe with a Zelda theme. And if you know what a maid cafe is, the age of these girls was very concerning, and like they look like they were 12 years old. I'm just like, what the fuck is going on in Los Angeles? A 12-year-old are trying to get me to go to a Zelda-themed maid cafe.
The maid cafe itself isn't Zelda-themed. They apparently have a bunch of themes. I went and looked this up on Facebook afterwards for science, of course.
Of course you did. But yeah, like LA is cool. I'm gonna be out here. You're flying back tomorrow morning.
Yeah, I'm flying back tomorrow morning. Unfortunately, I will definitely be coming back to LA at some point.
Yeah, I'm flying back on Tuesday morning because I'm gonna go to LA Kings game tomorrow night with a old buddy of mine.
John, of course, tomorrow we'll be staying in the Weeaboo Hotel.
Yeah, I'm staying in the Miyako. We accidentally walked into our hotel without realizing it because we were going through. Of course, I asked this guy. You know, you got one day in Los Angeles, what do you want to go to? I'm expecting to hear, like, Hollywood or the Walk of Fame. He's like, I want to see Little Tokyo, John.
Welcome to Barry Sean Omakase. I'm your host, John Carroll.
But no, I mean, I agree with your decision, but I'm also a Weeaboo, yeah. So it's fine.
Yeah, no.
Weeaboos want to see Little Tokyo.
There's just so many, like, little bakeries, and it is really cool. Little Tokyo is really cool.
It's very tiny, but it's really awesome. And like, the little part is very serious. It's like a block. But it's really cool.
And then Koreatown is like seven or eight times as big.
Yeah,
as it is.
K-Town is like gigantic. Like you can, it's really hard to walk through it because it's just so fucking big. It's just like just all these highways.
Yeah,
but we had some really great Korean barbecue. It was great.
Yeah, I made this joke on Twitter, but after it's one of my few good jokes, I'll make it again. But like, if I had found some random people to beat up on the street that were accosting me, I would have basically been living like what I play in Yakuza. I mean, we have Korean barbecue. I stopped multiple times throughout the day in various districts to get food. Then went and sang some karaoke. Like, it's Ryoga.
Yeah.
It was great.
The karaoke was cool, too. Mostly because of people we were with. But yeah, so I'm going to see that Kings game tomorrow. I'm flying back Tuesday morning. I had a great time here. That's my third time in LA. I'll definitely come back again. But earlier today, we did watch Judgment. As I said, we watched like half of Judgment. We got up to the six-man tag title match. I know it's not why you're here, but it was a really, really fun half of the show. Like, the undercard was awesome. That Tokyo Joshi Pro six-woman tag, like, that might have been, like, my third favorite match I've seen today. It was so good. And, like, Miyu Yamashita beat the fucking shit out of Charlotte and her poor teddy. Or, no, out of Yoshiko-sama and her poor teddy bear, Charlotte.
Yeah, like, since that match is somewhat on-brand for me, I'll talk about it a little bit, like, I'd seen maybe one Miyu Yamashita match before this. She looks like she will kill someone. Just like serial killer, stone face, just. And then she goes in. I don't know how Tokyo Joshi Pro found her, but she's like the one serious wrestler in this roster of ridiculousness, which is actually an archetype I really like.
Yeah.
And as much as this hurts my brand in other ways, I am all in on Yoshiko-sama. She wrestled basically the entire match. Holding this teddy bear.
Yeah. Which Maki Ito at one point grabbed and just like, you have never seen a woman take out more anger and frustration on a fucking inanimate object than Maki Ito took out on this teddy bear. It was so awesome. I love Maki Ito so much.
And then Yoshiko-sama took the teddy bear and smacked her in the face with it about as hard as humanly possible.
That match was so good. What were you gonna say?
No, I was gonna say it's just interesting to see how those characters work, and considering what everyone knows Yoshiko for, even if we discount the incident, she's known for like her wars with Rina Yamashita. She's known for being this badass.
Yeah.
That just, and so seeing she's really good at this stuff.
Yeah.
Kind of like Aja in Hustle doing like the American character, like.
Yeah.
I thought that character was really good. I think Yoshiko-sama is really good.
They should bring her back.
Yeah, it's just funny to me, considering Saki and Yoshiko had what I consider the worst World of Stardom title match of all time.
Well, once you told me the year, I was like, I don't doubt it, because Saki Akai fucking sucked in, like, 2014 or 2015. And I think she's improved a lot. She's, like, perfectly fine now, especially in the Saki-sama gimmick. She's way better. But, I mean, she's never going to be great, probably, but she's, you know, she's decent now. But yeah, 2014, 2015, she was like unwatchable. So I don't doubt. That was a very poor idea to put her in a War of Stardom title match. But what are you going to do, I guess? All right. I do want to mention, too, the bear trap, because that was awesome. The Super Sasadago machine setting this bear trap repeatedly for Jiro Ikemen Kishiro. And like, this stupid bear trap that never should have worked, it worked, and that was the finish. They built the fucking bear trap up and then had it be the finish. That was fucking perfect. I'm like slapping my leg because I love it so much. But yeah, so DET fucking owns. But you know what else owns? New Japan Pro Wrestling. And they had a very good show tonight at the Walter Pyramid. I guess let's give like live specific stuff first. The venue is very cool from the outside, especially because it's a fucking pyramid. Yeah. Like that.
Yeah, I've never gotten to see wrestling in a pyramid before today.
Yeah, I mean, unless they're going to start running it in the Luxor. Or like, I don't know where the fuck else we have pyramids. So they want to go. They can go do Tokyo Big Sight and do an upside down pyramid. But barring, I think they had done that actually. But barring that, you know, a very rare chance to see wrestling in a pyramid. The one thing that sucked about it was it took like an eternity to get in the building. You know, the doors supposed to open 3:30 LA time for the 5 o'clock start. We got there like 2:45, so like 45 minutes early. At that point, the line was already on the other side of the building.
Wrapped around.
Yeah. And it got so much longer after we got there. But, like, the reason why it took forever is because, like, they were doing, like, full fucking pat-downs. Which I haven't seen, like, the full, security pat-down in a while. That was something. I was like, okay. Like, I don't know. No one's coming to bomb the Walter Pyramid, guys. You can take it down a notch here. But once we finally got into the building, you know, it was a really cool setup. The dual, like, entrance ramps, like, you know, as someone who's been to Ryogoku, it really reminded me of Ryogoku, so it was like a mini Ryogoku, kind of. So that was really cool.
The longest merchandise lines in the history of humanity.
Yeah, I mean, anyone trying to buy merch, it's like, the internet exists. Like, I don't know why the fuck people miss.
I don't know if the exclusive stuff is going to be on the internet, yeah. So far, but it was like, I remember being at the Tokyo Dome, and the merch lines weren't that long. Like, even before the show, when I went to the Dome, they had an outdoor merch stand, and it was a giant line. Like, I wouldn't bother, but this line was longer than that. Like, I've never seen anything like it in my life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you have 5,000 people, and you have one merch table. I guess it's going to happen. Yeah. But yeah, so the merch line was really long. I didn't even bother getting in it. And, like, if you look at the two sides of the... Because where we were sitting, we were sitting on the hard cam side, like, row E, so, like, the fifth row of, like, the elevated. So pretty much the best seats we could have gotten, I think, other than like being ringside. And even you were saying it might even be better than like back of the row, because like you'd have to look over everybody's fucking head. Yeah. Like the ring was directly in front of us. We were almost dead center. We had the entrance, one of the entrance rays right directly to our right.
Yeah, so unfortunately you probably saw a lot of me on this show, whether you knew it or not, because I'm wearing this red Mayu Iwatani shirt, and thus I stand out like a sore thumb in the wave of Black Bullet Club merchandise and Black Los Ingobernables de Japón merchandise.
Yeah,
and
like I was wearing.
And Black Stone Cold Steve Austin t-shirts. There were a lot of. So yeah, you probably saw me and didn't know it. Hi, nice to meet you all.
Yeah. But what I was trying to say, though, is so for your city, we had a very good like view of the two like stands on either side, like the big stands of seats. And like they looked like half full when it started. So I was like, oh no, did nobody buy the secondary market? But, like, by match 5 or 6, they were completely full almost. Like, I have pictures. Like, they were almost completely full, like every seat taken up. So I think that was just people who were in the fucking merch line for the entire first like four fucking matches who finally got back to their seats.
I think I remember someone telling us that last year, it was say there's like people in merch line who missed the first two hours of the show waiting in the merch line.
Yeah, Rich was telling me about that too. I think it was Rich Craich. But yeah, I don't know. Like I like t-shirts too, but I cannot imagine missing like half the card that I came to see because I really wanted the Hello Kitty USA New Japan shirt. Now look, I kind of wanted that shirt. I love Hello Kitty, but I wasn't going to stand in a fucking 4-hour line for it and miss four match lines.
John, he stopped at the Sanrio store in Little Tokyo to make his previous Hello Kitty purchase.
I did.
So his Hello Kitty quota for the trip was met. Don't worry.
I did buy a Kitty-chan with a holding like a red ring, like a little plushie that was like on sale for 25% off. So don't worry, I got my Kitty merchandise in.
Weebs continue to bury each other the entire podcast.
I bought a Mega Man X figure that was because I just saw it and I was like, that was my childhood, basically Mega Man X. Everything else is always Mega Man regular. I don't give a shit about regular Mega Man. It's all about Mega Man X. So I got my Mega Man X figure and I got like a Hatsune Miku like lanyard so I could put that on and be special at anime cons. So
and a keychain.
And a keychain, yeah, I got a keychain.
I was going to buy stuff, but I wanted to save money for merch at the show, and then the merch line was so long, so that didn't end up working out, which makes me sad, because among all of the other weeb nonsense that I would have normally bought anyway, there's this Snorlax piggy bank that we saw at the store.
We saw it repeatedly.
And it's perfect. I mean, it's like, if you want to just put your coins in something, you need something like a piggy bank. It's got to be kind of big, it's got to be round, and it's a Snorlax. It's right there. It's like $39. I sincerely regret not buying this stupid Snorlax piggy bank. And it would just been funny to go home to my fiance. It's like, oh, would you buy your shirt? Did you buy a wrestling shirt? Did you buy this? No. Snorlax piggy bank.
I mean, we kept seeing it repeatedly. Yeah, like in the store. It was on the outside, like the facing the exterior, and then it was like three other places inside. They really wanted to move these fucking Snorlax piggy banks. They were all over the store. But yeah.
Deeply regret not buying a Snorlax.
You really should have. I regret that you didn't buy a Snorlax piggy bank. I might go there tomorrow and buy one. Just say I bought it now. But do you remember how much it was? I don't remember.
I think it was like $35, $40.
Very, the very reasonable price for a Snorlax piggy bank. I'll consider it. But anyway, New Japan Pro Wrestling is what we're actually here to talk about.
Back to the pyramid.
The pyramid is cool. I don't think they're ever going to run it again because it fucking sold out in 15 minutes. So like they can't run these tiny ass buildings anymore. But yeah, being in a crowd of like 5,000 American wrestling fans while the Japanese announcements were being made, that was one of the most surreal things in my life, especially since I had been to actual Japanese, and you too, been to Japanese wrestling shows before. So then to come and see, like, and hear the same fucking guy's voice doing the same announcements I hear all the time in Japanese with Japanese crowds in an American crowd, like, I don't know if I'm doing a good job explaining this, but it just was really surreal. And, like, that was one of those cool, like, goosebump feelings for me. I mean, the atmosphere in there was great. There were some annoying fans, but there's always going to be some annoying fans. It wasn't anywhere as bad as, like, a fucking Ring of Honor New York show. Like, those make me want to, like, jump off a building. But the actual, like, you know, there were a few fans I thought made too many WWE references, which, you know, annoy me because I don't like WWE. And there were a few fans that just were kind of annoying, especially like sitting kind of close to us. But
there was no one like when we went to King of Trios, the fans were just screaming Boston Crab for no reason.
There was no one on that level annoying. There was no one on the level of the guy in the suit at the last Ring of Honor Global War show who hated everyone on the show and then just randomly started chanting for John Cena. There's nobody like that. But so overall, I would call it the crowd a good crowd. And they were hot all night, too.
And I think something that's important, because I think one of the things that I and other people were talking about going into the card, just looking at it like the whole, it looks like a Karakuen.
Yeah.
And for New Japan, I think to be successful, I mean, obviously, I think going to the Cow Palace is going to be different, because they're going to be putting a lot more people. But depending, they can't just give away big matches at every single show where they'll run out of them. They need to be able to run a show like this.
But like has like a big match basically, but the rest of the card, you know, God bless Hangman Page and Jay White, but that's not exactly a title match that was going to be main eventing on the arena in Japan of significance. So you know you don't want to give away like you know four title matches or anything. So
well, I think this is one of the best balanced shows that I've ever been to, and that everything had a purpose and everything did a good job at doing what it was supposed to do on the card.
Yeah, it felt to me like, I mean, you know, I've been to New Japan, a New Japan Cork, and actually only once, but it felt like that to me up through like match four or five. But then everything from the rest of it was, you know, was not like a, you know, you always pronounce it correctly, and I should start doing it too. But everybody else says Cork, and I know that's incorrect, but that's what everybody else says. But yeah, so a good show. Let's get into the match by match here. The opener was the SoCal Uncensored trio of Christopher Daniels, Frankie Kazarian, Scorpio Sky, taking on the trio from Chaos, Roppongi 3K, Rocky Romero, Sho and Yo. Everybody was pretty over here. The crowd, like, reacted bigger for SoCal Uncensored than I thought they would. But then, like...
We're in SoCal, by the way.
I know. That's when I... Like, when they had that pop, I was like, what the fuck, really? And then I was like, oh, duh, we're in Southern California. And that's why... Oh, but they weren't that into them in the actual match. They just really popped when they saw that SoCal license plate on the screen, I guess. But... And then Punky 3K was really over, too, though. So that was where I was like, okay, this is a pretty hardcore crowd. If not that Sho and Yo aren't pushed, but they're not. They've been.
And Rocky's also wrestled a million matches in Southern California.
But Sho and Yo have been around for like 5 months or something. So that's really as a push down.
They're little big ROH Tempura Boys fans.
Yeah, but I mean, I thought it was a pretty hardcore crowd, though.
Yeah, no, so. I would tend to agree. Just and like, oh, other thing, like there was probably at least one out of every four, or one out of every five people had some form of Bullet Club merch on, if not more than that. Those guys are moving a shitload of merch.
It was like a lot of Bullet Club and then a lot of LIJ from the rest. Yeah. I mean, nowhere near as much Bullet Club, but like of the people not wearing Bullet Club shirts, like probably half were wearing LIJ, and then like the other half was just like random other wrestling shirts.
Yeah.
Like Kazuchika Okada needs to learn how to make merch apparently, because he's
merch is almost universally awful.
Yeah, and like I saw like two Rainmaker shirts.
Yeah.
In the entire crowd.
I did my job representing Stardom wearing my Mayu Iwatani shirts.
So. I was in a purple and black LIJ shirt because I was like I'm gonna be all clever and wear an evil color one when Evil's not even here, so no one else have my shirt. And like five other people I saw with my purple and black shirt. So it's like, all right, I should just wear my Naito face shirt or something. I have to tell the story actually from the plane. So I talked about this on Twitter. I wore my Naito, my LIJ shirt with Naito's face on it, on our flight early yesterday morning from New York to LA. As I'm exiting the plane, one of the flight attendants looks right at me and is like, "You look like the guy in your shirt." I was like, "Thank you." And then, like, I mean, that was like the greatest compliment. Like, there was no way for him to know how much he had just complimented me. But that was the greatest compliment I've ever received, and the most savage own of Tetsuya Naito ever given to Naito. So
it's funnier because the guy who did this also looked almost exactly like Andrade Cien Almas.
No, it was the other flight attendant.
We had a flight attendant
look exactly like Almas. So Sean was like, "What? You have two?
We have two Los Ingobernables on the flight today."
But yeah, I don't know why. We were talking about T-shirts. That's why came up. Okay, opening match. It was perfectly fine.
It did everything it needed to do. It was my first time seeing the best moonsault ever variation of the
NJ. Yeah, I didn't even know they did that. I don't watch that much Ring of Honor, but I guess they've done that before. Sure. A fun little fact. The only wrestler on this entire card I've never seen live, and I swear, I kept thinking about this. I don't go to, after he started, I really didn't go to Ring of Honor, and I've never been to PWG or anything. The only wrestler on this entire card I've never seen live is Scorpio Sky. The only one. I've seen every single other wrestler on this card live, but not Scorpio Sky. So there you go. Congratulations to Scorpio Sky, who got pinned by the Roppongi 3, or by the 3K.
Can I just say, I like Roppongi 3K. I like Evil. Can we just please not call our finishers our name? Can we have some creativity, please, guys?
The 3K. Look, the 3K is a little less egregious because at least it's not the Roppongi 3K.
Yeah.
I don't really mind that one, but the Evil is really ridiculous. Like, Evil wins with the Evil is really ridiculous.
And even, like Hiromu finishes with the time bomb, but at least that's his nickname. It's not his name. Yeah. So that's... But still that. Like, you guys can do better. But I thought this was a perfectly acceptable match. Look, I love Christopher Daniels. He's been one of my favorite indie guys forever. I always enjoy getting the chance to see him. Rocky Romero was really, really over in this match. A lot of chance for Rocky, and it was a good, like, high pace opener. Get the crowd into it. I mean, the crowd didn't need much coaxing
The crowd was into, like, the fucking New Japan theme song. Like, they were like, ah, like, so this, they could have, like, I don't know, like, put out a bunch of mannequins and they would have been like, yeah. But it's cool. You want to be jazzed up. That's like the one advantage that, well, not the only advantage that New Japan has, like, over, like, a WWE, where, like, because they run here so rarely, like, the fans are so into just, like, the idea of seeing New Japan Pro Wrestling that they don't have to, you know, it's not hard to get them up for the fucking show. Like, they're up, you know?
It's kind of like when Impact would draw those big crowds in the UK, the same kind of thing, when the UK scene was being built and not quite, what is it, with all the indies you have. Like, Impact was one of the biggest companies that was going there semi-regularly, so it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah. And I think New Japan, like, they I've always said, if Dragon Gate USA had been, like, two or three shows a year, not trying to be a regular promotion, I think it would still be here to this day. If New Japan keeps running, like, you know, a handful of shows a year and not, like, humongous tours that go all over the country, I think they'll keep their specialness and they'll be around a long time.
I think at some point they're going to have to go to the East Coast or Chicago or something like that and mix up where they do the shows, but we'll get to that later. Yeah. That's also relevant for something later on.
But yeah, so good opener, except a little bit of sloppiness, especially I like Kazarian, but it was good.
I like that Kazarian worked the knee, the slip into it and started, I don't know if he was actually hurt a little bit or not, but he was selling the knee and doing a bunch of stuff. He made it work.
Match two, David Finlay and Juice Robinson defeating Gato and Hiroki Goto from Chaos. It was Finlay pinning Gato with the stunner. I don't know.
By God, Kang!
I want to know how JR called this, because I immediately laughed. It's like, of course, we have to have someone winning with a stunner when JR is calling it. But yeah, the match was good. It was really short, I think. It was under 10 minutes.
Yeah, it was I think the shortest match of the night, actually.
Yeah. I don't really have any strong memories of this, honestly. Yeah,
I can talk about this one a little bit more. Like, I'm a somewhat casual New Japan fan. I watch big shows when I remember to watch big shows. I did not know Juice Robinson's new gimmick was the flamboyant Juice Robinson, so I was kind of surprised when I saw him coming out. Like, Hiroki Goto's lip guy, his mouth got busted open very early in this one. And he also has, like, the greatest theme in the company, which is saying a lot, because New Japan has a ton of great themes.
Yeah, New Japan has
His music is
I wouldn't
awesome.
Even say I wouldn't even agree it's the greatest theme, but it's one of the best, and they have a lot of really, like, a lot of really good themes. But yeah, Finlay got the pin, which ended up meaning something later on. Of course, Gato did the job, because all he really does, he's
laughing all the way to the bank.
That's true, the Rain Taker. Match three. Let's just get right into it. Yeah. Killer Elite Squad defeating Chucky T and Toriano. By pinfall of the Killer Bomb on Chuck Taylor. This was fucking awesome.
I really enjoyed this match.
First of all, Toriano could have been elected fucking mayor of Long Beach. Like, that crowd loved that man so fucking much. For all the fucking shit that Toriano gets from some anti-fun nerds, okay? I'm speaking specifically to some people on this very website. Anti-fun nerds. The people in this audience adored him. And I have to say, even if you are like, convinced yourself that you were completely sick of his act, I never want to see it again, blah, 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 when you're seeing it live, it's fucking awesome. And he just, like, the entire package, you know, it just fucking owns. Chucky T, obviously, also popular. You know, I'm sure there were PWG fans in attendance and stuff, and they were, you know, he wasn't as popular as Yano, but the crowd definitely got into him even more as the match went on. And Killer Elite Squad, I was down on them in the preview I wrote for this show, because I really didn't give a shit about any of the matches on the New Japan Cup. But I thought they were great here. They were really good foils for Chucky and Yano, just really good at playing the straight men. And, you know, Archer especially, just the looks he would give to Yano throughout the match. Like, whenever Yano would, like, turn around, he'd be there. He'd just get a look on his face. There's one point where he was, like, teasing he was going to do a dive, and Yano, like, jumped basically down so he couldn't do the dive. So he had this look on his face like, this motherfucker making me get out of the ring. And, like, you know, just, like, rolled his eyes and, like, put, like, went over the top rope and out there. And then it turned out to be a trap. So good for Yano and Chucky. But, yeah, I mean, this was a really fun match. I really... had nothing to complain about here. I thought it was awesome.
I thought this was a really good match. I think Chuck Taylor is basically the perfect partner for Toru Yano, like this great underdog team.
Yeah.
All of Yano's nonsense and how beloved Chucky T is. And then when he got in there, he killed Archer with a really cool looking pile driver. They did a lot of. I think my favorite Yano spot was when it looked like he was going to go do a dive, hit the ropes, then go and charge and remove the turnbuckle pad covering. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
This is the kind of match that fits in perfectly on a show like this. Because it lets you get in the comedy, it lets you do something different. There's a great bridge between the second match and where we would go next. I thought it was a lot of fun. And the crowd was just being so into Yano and so into Chucky T and so into Lance Archer stampeding around the ring, spitting water and throwing water on everyone he could possibly reach.
There is this guy in the front row who, when like, he's doing the spray, like, normally people get out of the fucking way. He, like, threw both arms out. Like, in a crucifix pose, and put his face forward as if to be like, I'm ready, basically. And he spit it right in his fucking face. And then he came back around and did the same people twice. I was like, that is just fucking mean. But yeah, the water spit is awesome. I hope he never stops doing that. I'm sure, like, people, like, germaphobes in the audience must not be really thrilled.
Well, look, if this is, like, the 80s, 70s or 80s, Bruce Brody's running the crowd attempting to, like, attack people, this is mild. This is okay. We can live with this.
All right, so then the next match, before the next match, so it was supposed to be Cody Rhodes and Marty Scurll against the Gorillas of Destiny, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa. So everybody comes out. Cody, who is like the best insufferable fucking prick asshole in wrestling, he comes out and does this promo about how there's not going to be a match tonight. Bullet Club is fine, but what's not fine is New Japan's booking, and we're not going to fight each other because we're friends. And meanwhile, Tama Tonga and Tonga Loa were like the most over they've probably ever been. Like, the crowd loved these two men, and you have all these Bullet Club fans, so like they view them as like the purest Bullet Club, basically. It's like you're the
OGBC.
They kept chanting OG, and like the crowd was so into them, and they. To their credit, like, their charisma, especially Tama, of just fucking standing there and not saying anything and just looking like he could not give less of a shit about whatever Cody is trying to tell him. Like, they have great charisma in this role, this new role of, like, the Bullet Club Switzerland. And the, you know, when Cody's trying to tell him there's not going to be a match, you know, Tonga Loa ends up taking the mic and saying, you know, we're not going to deprive the people of Long Beach of a match. And on top of that, if we were on any team, it sure wouldn't be Team Cody, which that is a cool line, and like that's news. I mean, in this angle, like they had not gone as far to say as, you know, they haven't said anything about what side they're, you know, the Tongan / OG contingent is on, other than Chase Owens being a honorary lover. So I mean, like, they haven't said anything. So for Tonga Loa to come out and say like we definitely wouldn't be Team Cody is, you know, that is breaking news. But the pre-match too, with Cody and Marty doing that yay boo thing forever. I mean, I don't like Marty Scurll as a serious wrestler, but I've said this before. As a fucking comedy dipshit, I think he's great. I think that's what he should be doing, is being this moron who flaps like a bird and, you know, keeps trying to, you know, prove to Cody how much more popular he is or something. And then early on, right? You want to do the spot early on? Remember, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, the Google, we can work in this.
So like, the Gorillas of Destiny, like, they beat up the shit out of Cody and toss him out of the ring. While they're posing, Marty Scurll comes up behind them and starts going like, yeah, guys, right, we got him, we got him. And I'm celebrating with him forever, start flapping. And then they turn and look at him like, you fucking moron. And they toss him out of the ring too. And then immediately he's back on Cody's side.
He just jumps into Cody's arms. Yeah, jumps into Cody. And then Cody, Marty, and Brandy all hug and everything's...
Yeah.
The one issue I have with the whole Bullet Club split storyline is that Cody is an idiot.
Well, that's undoubtedly true.
Yeah, like, I don't understand his logic, and I mean, I think something we'll talk about later in the context of the main event of this show is that, theoretically, Cody should have no allies.
Yeah.
Any ally that Cody has is because of something unfortunate that has happened in relation to Kenny Omega's either leadership of the Bullet Club or his courtship of Kota Ibushi.
Yeah.
Like, Cody should have no friends, except for Brandy, because they're married, and she's his wife, so that makes sense. But, like, Marty Skrull has immediate gratification issues. He clearly needs to be loved, and so he will glom on to whoever is showing him the most affection and care at the moment. So that happens to be Cody right now, so that's working out. Even Hangman Page, who is, I think, in his corner, is because he's pissed, and even he's pissed off at the whole Omega and Cody getting all the attention kind of thing. So I don't know how Cody has allies, but Marty Skrull will do for today. I was way more into this match than I expected to be.
Yeah, anyway. Match is fun.
Like, I really like Tama Tonga. I like a lot of his singles stuff. I've always wanted to see him get a bigger role. But this storyline is so over in this building that it's impossible to not get sucked into it.
Yeah, the crowd really, really, really loved the whole Bullet Club split storyline. And, you know, I mean, you know, it is interesting.
Like,
you know, it's a good storyline. I think it's one of the better parts of New Japan.
It's way better than the NWO split storylines.
Do you remember, that was all over that first Thunder. I've watched it, you know, when they put it on the network recently, and like it didn't make any fucking sense at first, because it's like, why are the NWO coming in separate limos? Why are Hogan and Bischoff in a separate... Like, half the people that were in separate limos didn't actually end up...
NWO Hollywood, NWO Wolfpack, and the NWO B team.
But they didn't end up on the same separate teams. Like, they just kept fucking... I don't know. By the time we got from, like... This was, like, January 98. By the time we got to the actual split in, like, April, like, the initial split, like, didn't make any sense.
I wonder how much money both WCW and WWF spent during the Attitude Era on limousines. Like, renting limousines for people to show up at their freaking shows, and stepping out, Vince getting out of a limo, doing the big walk, I can't imagine what the budget on limos was, and on cars to be destroyed, because obviously, Stone Cold destroyed a whole bunch of cars, but WCW, not to be outdone, had a whole bunch, the Hummer, and all this other, a lot of vehicular
destruction.
They
had the fucking junkyard match where they, like, blew up a car or something, like, in a compactor. It was like, okay. I don't know how we got on this, but the match was good.
But Cody won, unfortunately.
Yeah, Cody pinned. He pinned Loa with the Crossroads, which makes sense because
And Tama Tonga tried to make the save, but Brandy grabbed him by the ankle. And then my favorite part of the match is he ran over to like half conscious Marty Skrull on the floor. He's like, "We won!
I mean, you know, I kind of figure Cody needed to get the. I don't know if I predicted or not, but it made sense when Cody got the pin because. He's got the big match with Kenny in 2 weeks at the Ring of Honor Supercard of Honor, so...
I completely forgot that was happening with that. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I was in my head kind of wondering, all right, when is this going to happen on a New Japan show? Because it kind of has to at some point, but I guess it's in
New Orleans. They have it in New Orleans, yeah. All right, and up next was the 8-man tag team match with Los Ingobernables de Japón, Bushi, Hiromu, Sanada, and Naito.
John's husbando.
One of my many husbandos. But let me say, Naito, Taichi...
there's no accounting for taste, people.
Endo. I'm going to keep going. And Miyu is my waifu. I have a lot of husbands and wives.
You're clearly a masochist.
the other team, Hiroshi Tanahashi, Kushida, Yusuke Taguchi, and Dragon Lee. So it was Naito hitting the Destino on Taguchi, which every time I can see Destino live, I'm very happy. So that was cool. You never know, you know, right? An 8-man tag if you're going to get to see that move. First of all, LIJ was extremely over, even more over than I expected them to be. Like, it was a Bullet Club crowd, but they loved them some fucking LIJ too. I mean, Bushi and Hiromu got a big pop. Sanada got like an okay pop. I mean, his team isn't really conducive to big pops, but he did get a good reaction when he came out. And then Naito got like an enormous pop. I mean, it was so loud that apparently on commentary, like Milano Collection AT said something like, you know, Japanese charisma is American charisma. Or, like, you know, basically, like, it crosses over. Oh, we forgot to mention his line about Chucky T that you read about.
Yeah.
He said, Chucky T looks like a Japanese zombie, man. What a fucking owned by Milano on Chucky. I hope Chucky hears about that and, like, works it into the gimmick or something. But, yeah, this match was awesome. I feel like a broken record when I talk about any LIJ 8-man because they're always great. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen a bad one. They have so much charisma together. They are the best unit in wrestling when it comes to working together as a unit in a match. I mean, they're perfect. Like that.
And that's the thing. They're a unit at all times. Like, and they do stuff that you don't even see other stables do, in spite of the fact that they're together. They obviously have that connection, but they're just And Hiromu and Dragon Lee, getting to see them fight in person was fun. Continue their long-running courtship with fists and kicks.
That
and...
They were a lot of strike exchanges on this show.
Oh my!
Because so the crowd, I mean, the crowd ate them up every time. So I get it. But yeah, the Hiromu and Dragon Lee slap one was probably the best one because it just went on forever. The crowd was so into it. But yeah, back to like what I was saying about LIJ being like such a cohesive unit. I mean, it stands out even more in New Japan because. Like, when you look at the other units, the only other one that I would call a cohesive unit is Suzuki-gun. Like, Chaos is not a cohesive unit at all. Chaos is, like, they don't even know who the fuck is in the unit half the time. Like, should people ask, like, is Chucky in? Well, I don't know. Does he know? So no one fucking knows of Chaos. Bullet Club is, like, you know, there's, like, five Bullet Clubs. So I can't really call that cohesive. No one knows my Kota Ibushi. Like, they were asking, is Kota Ibushi? Kota Ibushi was asking, am I in the Bullet Club? In one of these post-show things. So they have no idea. Sekigun is Sekigun. I mean, they're not supposed to be cohesive, and that's basically Taguchi Japan too.
Yeah.
I'm not missing any, right? No, that's it. So like LIJ and Suzuki Gun are the ones that actually feel like cohesive units, like people.
Coincidentally, it's because they just like monkey stomp people and like throw things. And cheat.
So like at the very start, right when Naito teased forever that he was going to just wrestle Tanahashi, which the crowd was so happy about this. And then I just remember thinking, like, you guys, come on. Either Naito's going to tag out or someone's going to attack Tanahashi. And, of course, Sonata ran in and attacked Tanahashi. And then as Naito and Sonata were beating Tanahashi down, someone in the crowd yelled out, like, Yamuro or something. Like, please stop in Japanese. Or, like, you know, please, you know, stop what you're doing. It was so fucking funny. Whoever timed they timed it perfectly. So, whoever did that, I butchered it just now, I'm sure. But yeah, it was whoever yelled that, congratulations.
A bunch of fun spots in this. The triple Taguchi Japan submission on LIJ, and at one point also I like Tanahashi countering the Skull End into a Dragon Sleeper of his own, calling back to that he used to use the Dragon Sleeper back in the day, back especially during his U30 title days.
He always used all the Fujinami moves. That's why.
Yeah, no, I mean, I thought it's just fun. They did the finisher sequences. Like, this is the kind of thing that you can always put on a show, even here, even with, like, an American crowd is usually used to, there's a singles match. And guess what follows the singles match? A tag team match.
Yeah.
Then we'll have six more singles matches.
Yeah.
But, like, this is the kind of thing that just because the personalities involved are so big and so over, it also means you get to see everyone, like, everyone was happy to see Taguchi hit people with his ass. Everyone was happy to see Kushida get in and do his thing. Everyone was happy to see Dragon Lee. Happy to see Tanahashi do what Tanahashi did in the match. Like
which is almost nothing.
Yeah, which is basically nothing. But same.
He's the master at doing absolutely nothing in these 6 and 8 mans. And God bless him. I mean, I'm sure it's the only thing keeping him going at this point.
There's a sling blade.
Yeah, he did a sling blade. That's all about the only thing I remember him doing.
And a Texas Cloverleaf and a Dragon
you're
Sleeper.
Right. You're right. Okay. But like no like anyway
no high five
but this is awesome. I will never complain about seeing LIJ. I know people are sick of them, but you people can shut up. I don't know. I didn't have anything good there.
I'm sad. Evil was hurt. Evil is my favorite.
Yeah, Evil's awesome, and hopefully we'll be back soon. Up next, before the next match, we have Rey Mysterio Jr. coming out to address the crowd. Yeah. That was kind of a surprise, right?
Like, yeah, no, that was not announced, I don't think.
Yeah, they did not announce that Mysterio was still showing up. So, I mean, they might have, because we both missed the time change in the end. But
then Meltz apparently put that scoop on Twitter, but I had no reception in the Pyramid, which is why I didn't live tweet this show, so.
Mm. Yeah. I had good reception at the start of the show, but it got, like, progressively worse. Like, I tried to tweet out a picture of the two sides of the building pretty full, but it never worked. But yeah, so that was good. And then, Mysterio came out and addressed the crowd, and he basically said, you know, he wants to apologize for not being able to wrestle, which no one in that crowd is going to be like, fuck you, Ray! Wrestle with a tore bicep! So no, the crowd ate it up. He said he does want to wrestle in New Japan still, which is cool, you know, because there was some speculation that he was going to go sign at WWE. But yeah, so he basically said, well, I'll be back as soon as I'm ready. Talk about the start of Ospreay Liger, because I gotta blow my nose.
Okay. I really enjoyed this match. I don't know if John enjoyed it as much as I did, but it kind of felt like they went into this match under the assumption, okay, this was supposed to be Mysterio and Liger. It was supposed to be this dream match. And so now Ospreay's in it. He's the junior champion, so they have to figure out, okay, what are we gonna do? All right, Liger, just go
You just drop me on my head on the entry ramp, like, 2 minutes into the match. And that's basically exactly what happened. So, Liger gets in his Liger stuff early, his Rita Romero special, the surfboard, like, all that. And then they fight out, like, under the rampway, and Liger drops him with Brainbuster on the rampway. Ospreay questionably beats the count and gives everyone a chance to hear 19, which everyone loves, of course.
No, that was... Look, Will Ospreay lost his match from count out. I mean, like, that pause between 19 and 20 was so fucking
even
long.
Even by New Japan standards.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I forget if who was the ref, or it was Marty Asami or somebody else, but, like, basically someone's a chant, like, you screwed Liger chant or something, because Liger should have won this match by count out and got a junior heavyweight title shot, damn it.
But I like this match a lot. Ospreay sold the leg a lot and, like, was able to do a lot of his flying.
Well, I thought
shit.
He was
like,
really.
Well,
I thought he was.
He
really
might have been really hurt. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. But it's even more impressive if he's actually hurt and able to do a lot of the stuff he did on one leg.
It kept him from doing anything too stupid, too. Probably. So I don't. I mean, I'd like this match too. I'd probably go like 3 3/4. It was good.
Yeah, that's probably about where I would put it too. Liger hit the Super Brainbuster, which I'd never seen him do live. That was cool. Ospreay saved the foot of the rope. Oscutter finishes it for Ospreay, and then in the post-match, Ospreay gets the mic, basically calls out Rey Mysterio ringside, makes the challenge, and while that's going on, John's favorite flapping villain comes back out, attacks Ospreay with the umbrella, unmasks Rey Mysterio, that gets huge heat, and then Liger comes back in to make the save.
So it sounds like Liger, probably Liger versus...
Yeah, Liger called out Liger called out Skrull.
So Liger versus Skrull and Rey versus Ospreay, yeah.
I think but they're probably setting up Ospreay Skrull for some in the immediate like future time horizon.
They can take it far away from me. Don't give a shit about that match.
I don't know. I really like Skrull's aesthetic with the Plague Doctor mask.
It's so try-hard, though.
I think that's what I like about it, though.
To me, it's like he feels like he should be posting on 4chan. I don't know.
That could be the gimmick, actually.
That could be the gimmick. But yeah, this was good. It was a good match. You know, Will didn't do anything too stupid. And Liger, how the fuck is Liger doing all this shit at 53 years old? That's always been my biggest question. Like, what the fuck is he? Are we sure he's not dead and there's not another Jushin Liger?
Remember, this is the guy who, is doing Shooting Star Presses. His ability to adapt. He has a bunch of stuff now that he knows is over. He knows exactly when and how to place it for maximum effect.
Yeah.
He's one of those that stereotypical knows more about wrestling. He's forgotten more, should I say, about wrestling than some people will ever know.
You know, I tried to... The other day, I, gave Nicole that line, my girlfriend, and, she basically tried to tell me I made that up. And I was like, no, I've heard that a million times. Blah, 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 has forgotten more than blah, 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 that we'll ever know. And she's like, is this a wrestling-specific thing?
No.
And I was like, I don't think it is. I just think you, for some reason, you don't know this line. But, yeah, she got very angry at me for using that line. But because she's so used to all the wrestling specific stuff, she's like, "What's a pop? Why are you saying something has heat? Why?"
Part is now that she'll know it. Once you learn the lingo, you start applying it to everyday life.
No, she hasn't.
That's probably the best.
Over is the one that annoys her the most.
Wrestling is something she probably accepts grudgingly in her life, but as a baggage that comes with you.
Yeah, I'm sure that is, along with the weave stuff and everything else about
continuing burial of John on his own podcast.
The next match was Suzuki Goon against Chaos. Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Kazuchika Okada and Tomohiro Ishii. Submission. I'm using cage side seats for this, and their exact quote, just for the results to refresh my memory, their exact quote is something wacky from Sabre on Ishii.
It was the fucking orienteering
from Napalm Death, the move he's won with for all the last fucking month in the Japan Cup. Get together, cage side. What are you doing? I don't know the fucking finisher that he's used to win the last 5 matches.
I love this match.
This was so awesome. I was thinking about a star rating. I'd probably go 4.25.
I'd go 4.25. This was great because okay, you have the two title challengers, and they we need tag partners.
No, Ishii's not a challenger.
I'm talking about so you have Sabre and Okada, and they're okay, we need partners for this match. Let's go find the meanest men we can possibly find that we're on good terms with.
Yeah.
So Sabre goes and gets Minoru Suzuki. Okada.
Who, by the way, was so over. Hearing that many people in America scream Kaze ni Nara and That was amazing.
It's my first time seeing Suzuki live, so getting to hear that was really
Sweet. That was cool. Because I saw him in NOAH in 2016, and I saw him again during the G1, obviously. But
he's much better than Japan.
Yeah, obviously. That's the understatement of the century from Sean Williams here. No, like, he was more over in this fucking building than he was in Ryogoku. Like, the crowd was so fucking into him. I just think it's because, like, there is nothing... Like, there is no equivalent to Minoru Suzuki in American professional wrestling.
He is kind of what WWE wishes Brock Lesnar would be.
Exactly. I mean, like, he's this grumpy veteran. He used to be a shooter. He does his fuck... Like, I'm not doing him justice because he is Minoru Suzuki. There's only one Minoru Suzuki. And his renaissance over the last, like, 6 months after... Like, I was fucking sick of him by last summer, and I was sick of his fucking never title reign and the run-ins. It's really just the fact that they really cut the fucking shit way back with the run-ins with Suzuki-Gun, and pretty much since the moment they started doing that, Suzuki-Gun as a whole has been like one of my favorite units in New Japan. It's like probably right behind LIJ.
You will not be surprised to know that Ishii and Suzuki beat the holy fuck out of each other on numerous occasions in this match.
There were some of those elbows were just ridiculous.
And the crowd's like shushing everyone so we can just hear them beat the piss out of each other. Like, yeah. Some of that was alarming. I like the Saber Okada exchanges. I'm maybe the one person in the world who really wishes Zack Saber Jr. would take the fucking title off of Okada.
I mean,
from an in kayfabe standpoint, he's the perfect guy to do it. I am okay with whatever result happens, except one. If Okada beats the fucking best submission wrestler in kayfabe on the planet with his shitty fucking Cobra Clutch, I'm like not watching New Japan for 2 months because that move sucks.
Yeah.
His Cobra Clutch is basically equivalent of Cena's STF. It's bad.
Yeah.
And he just keeps beating people with it and it looks so bad every time.
I'm hoping what it's setting up is just to give him a submission that he could reasonably win with.
Why didn't he just make the beat people with the Red Ink? He tapped Yano with it in like a G1 once.
Yeah. But like that was probably just because Yano wants to hit the Rainmaker. But no, I mean, like, I think it's just set up, like, ultimately that's what I think it is. Just set up a, you know, like a submission that can reasonably win with to build drama. I don't think he's going to actually win with it. I think he's going to hit the Rainmaker and win. But you never know, I guess. It'd be pretty stupid if he won with it, I agree. But yeah, their exchanges here were cool.
Yeah. Watching Saber is just like watching no one else. Just how smooth he is, how he's able to turn things into other things, and the submissions that he has, there's really nothing like him. And so it's kind of cool seeing him team with Suzuki because they're basically two one-offs
in
the wrestling scene today for the most part.
And they're like the tag team submission stuff that was really cool.
Oh, that was so
cool. At one point where they just kept putting on different holds on, it was on Okada, right?
Oh, Ishii. Poor Ishii.
Oh, Ishii, okay. And like they just kept putting on all these fucking holds on Ishii and like moving from one limb to the next. It was pretty incredible. Sabre's very hit or miss for me. I think, you know, in the New Japan Cup, he had a couple matches that I thought were not, you know, as great as I would expect for that quality of opponent, like Ibushi and Naito. I thought he turned around with the Sonata match, and then the Tanahashi match was awesome. I think about like 4.25 on it. But I mean, Sabre, sometimes his stuff can be very masturbatory, in my opinion. Like, just feel like submissions for the sake of submissions. But here it built, and it built well in this tag match because it felt like he was torturing Okada with a purpose, and you know really like building that orienteering from Napalm Death, that building that move up as, you know, a possible move that's gonna probably get a really good reaction in Ryogoku next week at Sakura Genesis, because I think the crowd will buy the idea that he could tap out Okada. He tapped out everybody.
He tapped like everybody. Like,
yeah, which is, you know, and people were making fun of this idea that was great booking on Twitter, and like, I don't know what the fuck you guys are talking about. It's like these people who are so convinced that like modern WWE booking is like the peak of the human condition, and it's like, well, we need to have why don't we have you know, if he's not trading wins back and forth for the last like 3 years, then he must. I don't know what's going on. This isn't booking.
The thing to me,
Gato's booking is overhyped a little bit. I will definitely agree with that. And there's some decisions he's made that I wouldn't agree with. But like, to even compare him to modern WWE booking is the fucking dirt fucking worst. They took the best roster on the planet last year and turned it into fucking shit. So these people, they're at the lunch.
As John steps down from his soapbox, one thing I'll say about Sabre. The thing about him that's interesting to me is he seems like such a good, genuine person, like normally outside of the context of the ring,
But in wrestling, he's just this gigantic prick.
Yeah.
Like, it just the way he carries himself, the fact that he's, like, better at submission wrestling, just, it's an element of his character that I've seen. Like, the first time I ever saw him was when he was in Rey de Valladares and promised to become King of the Flippies with an armbar. Just, like, he has that, like, prickish kind of charisma that made him a perfect fit for Suzuki-gun. I'm really looking forward to the Okada match. I really want him to win. I know it's not going to happen, but I think it has potential to be a really good, really different kind of match. Yeah. I think this was a very good setup. I also want the Ishii-Suzuki match for the Intercontinental title, but I don't think we're getting that.
No, Suzuki Naito is a big thing right now. And that was the one weird thing on the show, is that Suzuki Naito had like these crazy exchanges all throughout the second half of the New Japan Cup tour, and that was like so over, and it was awesome, and it just was nowhere to be found here because there were separate matches.
Does Naito even want that belt?
No, but Suzuki wants to fight Naito, so.
Maybe if the belt's a Damascus, it might be in for more abuse.
But yeah, I mean, that could end up being like, you know, the match of the year. Their exchanges between Suzuki and Naito on the New Japan Cup tour were so awesome. They're both like at the top of their game. I think, you know, the only thing that might hurt it, you know, is that I think they're going to hold it off for Dontaku, which isn't exactly like a big, like, building full of, like, passionate fans or anything. So I don't know. We'll see. All right. Up next, we have the semi-main event. Jay White defeating Hangman Page with the Blade Runner to retain the IWGP U.S. Heavyweight title. It sounded like that American announcer announced Jay White as the IWGP Heavyweight Champion. I mean, maybe I just didn't hear him say U.S., but that'd be a pretty funny little gaffe if he did say that. So this match is going to be very polarizing, I think. You know, I get that a lot of people aren't into Jay White. I saw one person compare him to Jinder as WWE Champion. Like, oh, he might be worse in this role than Jinder as WWE Champion. When, like, Jinder was, like, what, the number two champion in the company, and Jay White is, like, realistically, at best, number three, and you know, I don't know. And Jay White's nowhere near as bad as Jinder Mahal, but I'm taking it to Twitter here. I don't know what I'm doing right now. Jay White over Hangman. I thought Jay White was perfectly fine here, and the stuff that he still puts into the match, that you know, the way he puts his character in, he does really subtle shit that I think can be hard to spot if you're not looking for it. The big thing at the start of the match to me, on a show where every single other fucking wrestler had a strike exchange thing, he would chop Hangman and he would fucking dodge every time Hangman tried to chop him. And that's like a really important little character trait. He is not a big, brave, fighting spirit dude. He is a fucking little prick who's trying to find the easiest way to win, and he wins by the goddamn skin of his teeth, which he did again in the finish.
He plans. He comes into the match with a plan. He knows what he wants to do. He has no desire to sit there and be some strong style bullshit.
Yeah.
He's the champion, and he's a little shit stirrer, and like he psychologically gets advantages over people, which is interesting because no one else in the company.
Yeah, all this shit where people say like, "Well, how is this guy wrestling to his character?" Jay White wrestles to his character. If you don't think it's enjoyable, I guess that's your call. But it's something different compared to the rest. I wouldn't want him as IWGP Heavyweight Champion right now either. But as this fucking U.S. weird red belt, I think he's perfectly fine in the role. The match itself, the first half was very, like, disjointed. And, you know, there was a little bit of that, like, you know, I do a move, you do a move. And it was kind of... There was one time where, like, Hangman Page was trying to do, like, a springboard. And clearly, they were not on the same page. And no pun intended. And, like, it just didn't work. But after the halfway point, I thought the rest of it was great. And like some of the spots they did were like really sick. So I think you need to give some consideration to that. Like the moves they did were like that top rope neck breaker, the German on the apron. Like they really like killed themselves to make this a good match. Paige looked awesome, which I mean I'm ready to like just turn the corner on him and just call him a good wrestler at this point because he was great here, I thought. And you know Jay White did his best to keep up with him, and I thought he did a good, pretty good job. And I liked the finish a lot because, again, it was just like the Kenny Omega match. He was getting his ass kicked at the end. Page had all the momentum. He was hitting move to move. He set him up for the rites of passage to finish him off. And Jay White fucking slips out like the little snake he is, hits the goddamn Blade Runner out of nowhere. 1, 2, 3. I thought that was an awesome finish. I really liked it. I thought I would go 4 flat on this match. I thought the
it was a little too disjointed and there was too many blown spots for me to go higher, but like it told a story, it built, and the spots were crazy. So I can't see going low with them four.
I thought this match was really interesting because I think they figured out... And look, there were a bunch of people in the crowd, you could see, that were getting up to go to the bathroom at the start of this. I mean, it's the one match between two, like, non-natives, I guess you could say, on the card. And so I think there are a lot of people who at least were going to use the start of it to go to the bathroom or whatever. And so they just beat the shit out of each other.
There was no intermission.
Yeah. There was no intermission. We should add that. There was no intermission in the show. They just beat the shit out of each other. So I think they knew that they might have a bit of a battle against them.
Yeah.
The beginning was a little slow. I think the crowd took time to get into this, but I think they did a great job of building, using the crazy spots, like you said. People got into it. Like, by the end of this match, there were crazy chants for Hangman. Like, yeah. I agree with what you said. Hangman Page got super over in this match because he took a shitload of abuse from Jay White. It was like, Jay just dropped him on his neck. Which is funny, the Hangman, like, Jay was working the neck of the Hangman the entire match. I thought it was kind of ironic. Just all this crazy shit. And then when he got in that offensive flurry at the end, everyone was really like, I thought they might switch the title, which was impressive. Because going into this, I thought there's no way.
Yeah.
And as much as I hate the Blade Runner as a move, the way he hit it here, sliding down out of the backdrop tombstone attempt, hits a quick, no bullshit, done. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it works for him.
Yeah. I would go probably 4, 4.25 on this. It's a match I'm going to want to rewatch just because, just to see, because the way it builds, and they gave them all the time they needed to do this, which was cool because what you said earlier I think is true. This isn't a match that would probably get this prominent of a spot on a card, on a New Japan card in Japan.
Yeah.
But they let them go, and they let the fact that Jay White has the credibility from beating Omega sort of help bring up Hangman Page too. I think this was a star-making performance for Hangman Page. I think he'll be able to do a lot more in the company, and given the way the Bullet Club storyline is going, what he decides to do is going to be more important now because he had a match like this, and now his stock in the company is higher.
Yeah, so I thought he was awesome. Can't say enough good things about the woke rope man. He's a cool dude. But yeah, it was a cool match. I really liked it by the end. And I think the Jay White haters need to take a step back.
Hey,
fucking Jinder.
Switch
to Jinder Mahal, who, by the way, is the best of the three people in that triple threat.
I've heard this like 75 times this weekend, by the way. 75 times, at least.
But I'll take Jinder, still nowhere near as bad as
Jinder. I'm really liking the character, like the press conference, the stuff Switchblade's doing, the little subtle shit. He just can't resist stirring the pot everywhere he goes. I think he could potentially be hugely important piece for New Japan in a lot of really subtle ways with their storytelling if they're willing to use him that way. So yeah. We'll see.
So then obviously the post-match was David Finlay coming out and spearing Jay White. He's not going to stop fighting him, and he challenged him for the title April 24th.
Yeah. So it's okay. Finlay might actually win this because he's not American, so no Americans.
No, he's American.
Oh, he is American. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he's Irish. I mean, he was born in it. I don't know. I think you'd call him.
No, I guess they, you know, I guess qualified. But that means he can't win the title.
That means he can't win the title. Yeah. We can't have any Americans winning this U.S. belt.
Yeah.
All right. Then we get into the main event. The Golden Lovers, Kenny Omega, Kota Ibushi, taking on the Young Bucks, Mick and Nat Jackson. We end up with the Golden Trigger on Matt. They both kind of just pile on top of him for the pinfall. It's like, talk about Golden Lovers. It's like a love pile, I guess. But, all right, first of all, obviously both teams were incredibly over, as you would expect.
I don't think I've ever heard anything as loud as the pop for the Golden Lovers live. Especially in the context, that's 5,000 people, small belt, just, it was insane.
Like, the crowd was very into the Golden Lovers. As far as, like, the actual match. So, okay, early on in the match, they had a very clear story they're going to tell, which was Kenny Omega did not want to fight the Young Bucks. Kota Ibushi was trying to get him into it, and just, you know, it was a struggle, and Kenny would, you know, stop at points and just not be willing to do it. Nick didn't really want to fight them either.
Omega was recovering from an injury before this match, right? Was he on the tour before this?
No, he wasn't. He wasn't on the Japan Cup tour.
Okay. I think that's important. I'll talk about that, why I think so, later, but keep going. Sorry.
So the match kind of, like, you know, basically starts out with Kenny not really wanting to fight. They had a long, like, you know, like, discussion, basically, in the ring, which killed some more time. Oh, so right before this match, if we found out, like, I guess hours beforehand, Meltzer broke in the news. Like, this had originally been listed on the New Japan website as a 30-minute time limit, which is pretty standard for a non-title match in New Japan is either 20 or 30 usually. And I guess at some point they went to them and said, we want to go over 30, buddy. So Meltzer tweeted out that it got moved to a 60-minute time limit.
Which is kind of a big deal because they don't do that.
I kind of look like a fucking idiot because I tweeted out. Like, I saw all these people saying, like, oh, we still got a 45-minute match here. And they didn't go that long, right? They were like 30.
They went about like 45. Like 40-ish,
I think. I thought they went under 40.
I think it's pretty close to 40.
Yeah, well, either way. Because we had
Quinlan here with his stopwatch, he would tell us.
Because I don't remember hearing, you know, Yeonju.
Well, I think they stopped calling after 30.
They called 35.
Did they do 35?
I heard them call 35. So it's somewhere between 35 and 40. Anyway, the point is, though, that when people were tweeting out this stuff about how they're going to go 45, I was like, what's wrong with you idiots? It's just a 30-minute time limit. And then five people reply, like, no, they moved to John. I was like, oh, okay. I'm sorry. But yeah, it was so early on in the match, it was weirdly sloppy. Like, very early on, Kota Ibushi blew like a couple spots, which is really a character for him. I don't know if he was he like nervous working in front of an American crowd that big, maybe? I don't know what it was. Was he jet lagged? Who the fuck knows?
There's part of me that wonders if some of it was on purpose.
Oh, it's possible.
Like, just because the initial Golden Triangle botch didn't like set my alarm off. But then that thing where he improvised that moonsault thing over it, that part looked planned. Like, something looked like... I think it was meant to look botched. There might have been something botched in there. But to me, that just sort of accentuated the fact that the Young Bucks have been working together over the past, like, whatever many years it is. Mm. Constantly. Omega and Ibushi are just back together. Omega wasn't able to work the previous tour. So they're sort of still re-gelling as a unit. I mean, so as long as it's 2-on-2, the Bucks theoretically have the advantage.
I mean, if that's what they're going for, then that was amazing. But I'm assuming it was like a bot.
I think that was generally the story of the match. I don't know if those bots played into it or whatever, but I think it worked because of the overall context.
But after that weirdness, I thought everything, like, after like the 15-minute mark, I guess, was really good. Incredible, actually. They obviously, with these two teams, they did every move under the sun. I remember what you said before the match started. It's like, any moves we haven't seen yet, we're going to see them in this match. But it still had, like, a story to it. Like, and it wasn't the shitty Young Bucks, like, Ring of Honor stuff where, like, you know, it just feels like, okay, how many fucking different ways can we do a flip in the next 20 minutes? And they, you know, had a real story. It built from start to finish with the story about Kenny not really wanting to fight them.
And I like that the Bucks, there was conflict within the Bucks even about as the match went on. Like, Kenny was the most obviously conflicted.
But Nick was really conflicted. Yeah. Nick tried to stop Matt from taking out a table, but then later on, he was like just so like fed up and like angry at being in this match. He like grabbed the table and was like, yeah, do it, let's do it. And wanted his foot under the table. And the table spot was awesome because I had no idea that was coming. Yeah. So they set this table up, and they take forever to get... Like, they keep teasing all this stuff.
Like, Kenny teased the one ring.
Kenny teased the one ring angel on Matt's throat, which I'm like, you'd fucking kill him. I was like, please don't do that. So, like, I've never been happier to see a man escape a move. But, yeah, at one point... But then
Ibushi German suplexed him from a second rope back into the ring,
not from the second rope, from Matt's shoulders. Like, that was even worse than the one he usually does. And Matt, like, landed like he was
on his head.
Like he was fucking killed, basically. But then, they put through, they go to do more bang for your buck, which is obviously a move. I'm sure everybody listening to this has seen, like, a trillion times. So you're not expecting when Matt goes up to the top to do the last moonsault instead of just fucking do a fucking elbow.
It
was an awesome elbow on Kenny to the outside instead of through the table. So that was an all-time great spot. I had no idea it was coming. Usually table spots, you have some idea it's coming. It just fucking, boom, happened. So that was incredible. And, yeah, I mean, the match is kind of a blur in my head right now. I feel like I need to go back and rewatch it. But, like, it was just every move you could think of, they did. But not in a bad way. Yeah. And, like, you know, at one point when Kenny did the gun pose, he goes through the gun pose to whichever down buck it is. I can't keep track of which buck was getting killed when.
Because their convenient name belts were off by then.
And he, like, he threatens to, pull the trigger on this proverbial gun and can't bring himself to do it. And then the Bucks recover, and Kota, like, at that point, drags Kenny back into the ring, drags his arm out into the gun pose again. He's like, do it! Fucking shoot him! And then Kenny finally does the gun pose, runs over and kills him with the V-trigger. So that was a great moment. And then the one-winged angel was incredible, too. Because he goes to put him up. You can tell.
Yeah, he lifts him up on his shoulders, and he's just conflicted. And then it's like the Shawn Michaels Undertaker thing where the Buck grabs his arm, puts it around his neck to hold him up. Just do it.
Yeah.
And at this point, he's kicked out of like a whole bunch of shit at this point because his partner got left. They were going for the Meltzer driver, and Ibushi caught him on the ring apron and just last-righted him through a table at ringside, so...
That was incredible.
So it was 2-on-1, the Gold Lover just beating the shit out of this poor Buck for, like, 5 minutes. And the one-winged angel, and it looks like that's it, but then the Buck rises from the ash of the table, like, perfect, you didn't see
Nick.
Him coming.
It was Nick that came out of the table.
Yeah, so Nick is at zero, you don't see him, he's in the ring at 2.9 and makes the save. And then he just sort of, like, has his last...
Yeah, but the one-winged angel, though, like, he actually, like you said, he put his arm on his throat basically made him give him the one-winged angel. That was such an awesome fucking moment.
And he didn't know that his brother would be there to save him because he thought his brother was still out.
He basically was like, put me out of my misery, do it, just fucking do it. It was great.
And then Nick comes in and just goes with whatever he's got left, and it's just not much, and then they beat him up, and then Matt's just already dead. So then they just kill him further with multiple different ways. At some point, they also hit their own version of like the Indie Taker.
That was awesome.
And it just
it was like, but he wasn't actually a tombstone. Yeah. It was more like a, I know there's a name, like an Emerald Frozen.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, because he had him like off to the side. But yeah, it was awesome.
I mean, it was basically everything you would expect from that match in front of the crowd that came to see them have that kind of match.
Yeah, I mean, it was incredible. The spots were incredible. The story was incredible. When you have both, you know, that's where you have an incredible pro wrestling match. So,
I mean, I think they're probably going to be a little upset at some of the things that meant, because these guys are perfectionists, but I think they crafted something that I don't think any other promotion in the world would let them tell. They're in the main event of this show in front of 5,000 people. They had around 40 minutes to tell their story, and like the first 10, like I remember hearing 15 minutes, and I'm like, what have they done? Like, there wasn't much happening. Like, it was the five minute call came when Kenny Omega is just
arguing with them, basically.
He's just upset. He's so upset, and you can just see it on the eight. Like, Ibushi's ready to fight because, like, Ibushi's like, I don't care what you're doing.
It was like, who gives a shit about the Young Bucks?
Yeah, he gives a shit about, come on, Kenny, let's do this. We're lovers, right? And Kenny's like, but my friends.
I have lots of love. I love them, too.
It was.
I love Kenny's new tights, by the way.
Yeah. It's like a little bit of all of his other personas. It has the green from his, like, original stuff. It has the black, the bulk of his, the new, the Golden Lovers insignia on it.
Yeah. And, like, now, people point this out, too, at the Ring of Honor shows, but, like, he's no longer the cleaner. He's now the best bout machine, which is great. A great little, you know, thing.
He just looks so happy to be the bouncing baby face.
Yeah. Man. I think, I don't...
Like, I love him as, like, the final RPG Voss melodramatic villain nonsense too, but it seems like he's just so happy doing this that it's impossible not to get behind them.
Yeah. So, really good match. I would go 4.75, I think. That's what I came down to. I was really waffling between 4.5 and 4.75, but I knew I wasn't going to go 5 because I think the stuff early on just, I'm assuming they're botches, and I can't give a match 5 stars when they have botches early on. But 4.75, I definitely...
I would go 4.75, too. Yeah. I wouldn't quibble with anyone who gave it 5, especially not anyone who is there live. It's one of the craziest spectacles that I've ever seen. I've been watching wrestling.
And it had a story. Yeah. Like, I don't want to watch people do fucking... I think at this point in my life, I do not want to watch spots for the sake of spots. But it had a fucking story that built from beginning to end.
Yeah.
By the time Kenny and Kota finally just killed that buck with that, with the Golden Star trigger, it was perfect timing. You were ready for it, and it felt like it was ready to put him out of his misery. It didn't feel like the match. It went 38 minutes or whatever. It did not feel like it went too long.
And I mean, I know we've been talking mostly about the Golden Lovers, but this is the best Young Bucks performance that I've ever seen.
I mean, like, they've been great.
I thought they both did a great job. They walked out in their entrance super serious. They were just like, this, you could see what this meant.
They wanted this
match so bad.
We're not dancing, basically.
They wanted this match so badly, and they came out there. And I thought it was a great way to do the contrast, to let... And look, they were still super over. There's still a lot of people cheering for them. But it was... Yeah. I would say the Golden Lovers were the faces-ish, if you had to pick one team, as the baby faces in that match. And then... That bit where I said Cody is not very good at this planning thing, like not good at making friends, comes out in the post-match, screaming at the Bucks after putting on this match, pushes, I think...
He pushed
the same one that Kenny...
No, it was the opposite. It was neck, I think.
Okay, so there's a bit of symmetry in that. Yeah. I thought it was the same one.
I thought it was Nick. Maybe you're right, but I thought I could have sworn it back.
Well, I think you're right.
But why the fuck would he come down and, like, berate these two people that are his last chance at allies, basically, other than Skrull and maybe Hangman?
Yeah.
It was really stupid by his part. I don't know. But his character is a fucking idiot. His character, like you're saying, his character is not a planner. He's a fucking... He thinks he's a diabolical villain, when in actuality he's just, like, this fucking crazy person. But he berates them. Golden Lovers come back down the ring and run them off. Kenny offers a handshake. Nick takes it. Matt doesn't. And that's the split. If you've been watching, like, Being the Elite and stuff, which I had never watched that show until this Bullet Club split angle started, but it's been awesome since the Bullet Club split angle started. And the entire thing has been very clear. Nick wants to believe Kenny, wants to forgive Kenny, wants to be Kenny's friend still. Matt is fucking pissed at Kenny. And that is, like, the divide. And it played out again here. And I really am starting to think they're going to build to Nick versus Matt and all that. Like, I think that's what's going to... I think that's going to be one of, like, the big matches. Which,
I could definitely see that.
Yeah. Which would be a big fucking match. I mean, you can't really say it wouldn't be. After that, they leave. Kenny cuts a really, like, a cool little post-match promo. He basically says, you know, we're going to have to come back now to an even bigger building. Going to do even bigger matches there. And then he says he's going to kick the poop out of Cody Rhodes.
Got a poop chant.
Which got a poop chant, which was great. And then that was it. Okay, so before we give our final thoughts on the show, they also announced Saturday, July 7th for the Cow Palace in San Francisco, as many people speculated. I am going to be in Los Angeles on Saturday, July 7th to go to a little something called Anime Expo, which is already booked, and I already have my tickets. I can't really get out of that. I am scared shitless that in that building of that size for the G1 special, that they're going to run Kenny versus Kota, which is a match that I originally had heard might have been for this show, and that's when I started planning to come here. Not that I regret coming at all, because I thought the main event was awesome and it was a good show, but I really want to see that match live. So
I think at this point they're going to run with the Golden Lovers is the thing.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I don't want to feel like I missed out on it. I guess I could technically go from LA to San Fran. It would involve like an hour flight, I guess. I was talking to a friend of mine about it before, and she was like, yeah, it's an hour flight. So I could do it. It'd just be, basically, I'd be burning a day of Anime Expo. So I don't know if I want to do that because, you know, I want to go to Anime Expo. But, so right now I'm probably not going to do it, but if they announce Kenny versus Kota, I would probably try to scramble and find a way to do it. But yeah, so that's the next American show. They didn't say fucking shit about this show that's supposedly happening in Florida as part of that CEO video game tournament. I think that's going to be in like May or something. I don't know. People know more about fighting games can tell you. New Japan's not said anything about that. So it's very weird to me. Like, I don't know if that's only going to be like a few matches or something. It's something, a deal Kenny made, and it's going to be like a little four-match thing or something. But they did not say shit about that on this show. All they said was... July 7th, Cow Palace, which is cool. I mean, it's cool. Good that they're running a bigger building. They definitely, I'd be surprised at this point they didn't sell it out. I mean, they're probably going to need another really big match and maybe a bigger card overall. But, like, they sold 5,000 tickets in 15 minutes. Like,
well, I mean, I think the question is, it's going to depend because
they sold 5,000 tickets basically sight unseen, and I think some people might have assumed they would get more like what the G1 special was. So now it'll be interesting to see what the next one is, but I imagine they'll be able to load this. I imagine that if Ray's healthy, Ray Ospreay would be on that. And there's a bunch of other stuff they could do to load that show.
I mean, I didn't really hear anyone grumbling.
Yeah, no, I agree.
People seem pretty satisfied leaving the show. So
because
I don't
know. It's like the format that New Japan has, the advantage is that all the wrestlers are over enough that getting to see them is the draw, even if it's in a tag match. Even if it's like, and what they are smart enough to make sure things like Naito gets a separate entrance. Naito wins the Destino. People get to see the Destino.
Yeah, but like the people. So basically, though, like I talked to people. I heard people talking outside. I talked to someone who's staying in the same hotel complex. I mean, I didn't even hear anybody. Everybody was like, "Yeah, it was one of the best shows I've ever seen. That was really great. That was awesome." So I haven't heard anybody complaining who was here. So if anyone thought it sucked, they were keeping it to themselves. But yeah, I mean, I had a great time.
I don't know how it comes across on TV, but just the energy in the building live was part of what made it so much fun.
Yeah, I kept trying to say the crowd was really into the idea of seeing New Japan Pro Wrestling. The idea of seeing New Japan is super over with a certain like hardcore fan at this point. And I don't know if New Japan has to do anything to keep that over. I think more than anything, you know, WWE's like lack of quality is helping that along too, because people are always going to seek out an alternative when they're not happy with the primary company. I mean, even when the primary company is good, there's always going to be people who want an alternative. But just the fact that they had such a shitty year last year, I think is really, you know, help leave that opening. And obviously Impact, you know, it's not really in that position anymore, not that they have been in a while.
And I mean, and I think the company's doing a good job of following up on whatever bump in the U.S. they may have gotten from Alpha versus Omega.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even last year, they sold all those two G1 shows in like 2 seconds. So, but yeah, I'm sure Alpha versus Omega helped with a bump too. But yeah, I think, you know, the company's hot right now in America. I don't know how long it's going to last, but they clearly have something here. I'm really interested to see what the Cow Palace tickets, you know, how they move. But anyone who thought like maybe it was just you know, resellers, there were very few empty seats in the building today. Like at the peak, like the building was pretty much full. So, but yeah, really awesome show. You know, not the best show I've ever been to or anything, but I've been lucky enough to go to a lot of awesome shows. But like the main event was incredible. Semi-main was very good, and pretty much, you know, the last three matches were very good. And the stuff that was more house show like was still pretty fun. So I mean, really nothing to complain about. Really awesome show, and I'm glad I came out here.
And it was, to me, a perfect example of everything on the card did what it was supposed to do.
Yeah.
Everything had a purpose, and everything was fun. Like, I loved Killer Elite Squad versus Chucky T and Yano, because everyone in that match just played their part so well. And that's what makes a great wrestling show. It's like, some nights you're going to be going 25 minutes in the main event, and some nights you're going to be...
Well, Toriano's not going to be...
Well, some nights you're going 4 minutes in the G1 main event because you got a count out win. But it's like everyone on this roster plays whatever role they're assigned to in any given day. Like, so well. Even like Goto's in the second match, and he just, the aura of, I love Goto. Yeah. I thought he did a really good job. Like, there were more strike exchange. He and Juice had some very, very good sequences too, but
building a never title match.
Yeah. Just everyone did what they were supposed to do. And then I liked not just the top three, I also liked Ospreay and Liger. It was better than I thought it would be going in. This was a really good show, top to bottom. A lot of fun. Just walked out with a smile in a way that not a lot of wrestling shows, top to bottom, give me. I mean, if you haven't seen this show, go out and it'll be on New Japan World, I think. Is it uploaded in like 48 hours?
I think Americans can watch it, within 48 hours or something. I mean, this is one of those shows that really just reiterated to me, like, if I like won the lottery or something, I would just be flying all around to see all these New Japan and DDT and all that shit, because it's just the most fun I ever have is going to these shows. Like, I really just wish I could get on a plane and go to Ryogoku next week, because it's a really good time. But yeah, Sean, this is your second New Japan show, right?
Yeah, this is my second.
Yeah, because you went to, we haven't even talked about this, you went to Wrestle Kingdom 2017,
one of the best shows ever. I mean, people have compared the two Wrestle Kingdoms. You know, I've seen some people say like they like this year's better because, you know, it was a better top to bottom show. But like, I don't think anything like this year's show could not top 2017 when it came to like those four matches
that,
in a row.
That top four is just the most ridiculous experience I've ever had.
Hiromu Kushida, Shibata, Goto, Tanahashi Naito, which was my favorite of the show, but I totally understand that people like Okada Omega better, but like I thought that match was incredible, and then Okada and Omega, which you know is
some one other thing that I don't want to be remiss that just think about Okada Omega reminded me of. The video packages they do for the top matches are really good now.
Yeah.
And like that Okada Omega video package, I remember sitting in the dome just watching that thing, and then when it ended and they brought up just the announcement of the match, I was like, holy shit, I'm so ready for this.
Yeah, the video packages are good, and like all the videos in general and stuff are good. I don't know. I mean, I know people had a lot of trouble apparently with Access TV's production of the show, but like New Japan's like production in the building, I mean that comes off really major league.
Yeah.
Like that, you basically feel like you're at a you know a like a major league professional wrestling show. So, but yeah, I know. I can't speak to what the fuck Access TV was doing because I heard like there was some really terrible production choices on that side because like they missed a brainbuster from Jushin Liger or something, which is like the near fall they cut away, which is really stupid. But I don't know. I saw some WWE fans on Twitter making fun of it, and if there's any promotion on earth that shouldn't make fun of anybody about production, that would be the one. And there was a reply like I saw from a guy who's like, he basically said that WWE doesn't do jump cuts and shaky cam all the time. Like, what the fuck?
What are you watching?
I'm just gonna call him out. It's that fucking Jamesy guy. I hate that guy. Oh, fuck him. He's never gonna listen to this anyway. But if he does, buddy, you're an asshole. That's probably a little harsh.
He blocked
me at one point and then unblocked me out of nowhere one day. But like, I should block him because I cannot stand seeing his fucking takes on my fucking when he gets retweeted on my timeline. Like, just go watch WWE and shut up. How about that? Just stop talking. I never want to hear about your takes on New Japan again. But anyway, now that I've buried some poor chap, because I think he is like English or Irish or something. That's about it, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's good. This is
but Sean, you watch more WWE than I do. Do they or do they not have shaky cam and jump cuts all the
time?
It's
one of those things that you don't notice until you notice it, and when you notice it, it becomes totally unbearable.
Like, I watched that main event from the last SmackDown pay-per-view, and they fucking did a cut, like, every five goddamn seconds during that match. It'd be like, cut. It could be two guys in the ring just doing a move, and they would cut like four fucking times. Like, I cannot. It's one of the most unbearable parts about watching that promotion to me. But anyway, so Jamesy, shit take. Do better. Let's wrap this up before I bury anybody else. I mean, look, I buried myself too.
I buried John too.
I can give it. I can take it. Jamesy, I don't know you. You're probably a swell guy. I'm sorry I just buried you out of nowhere. I feel bad now. But yeah, so I can, but I'm not going to. I want to go to bed. I have to like upload this show. It's like my computer still tells me what time it is in America, and it's like
we're in America.
I mean, in New York. And look, if we
were in Japan, it'd be a lot smaller hotel room.
That's true. But no, I mean, in New York, I mean, it's like 3 a.m. in New York, and it feels like it. But all right, so let's wrap this up. Sean, go ahead and plug whatever you're gonna plug. You did the great Stardom series.
Yeah, I'm on at the Dragon Suplex on Twitter. I've done a three-part introduction to Stardom for Voices of Wrestling, working on an article right now on the history of Oedo Tai, doing some research and watching a bunch of recent shows to try and find exact quotes I want from Oedo Tai promos. It's a lot of fun going through and just trying to find stuff like that, but hopefully it'll result in a good end product. Hoping to have that for you guys soon. Otherwise, I'm hopefully launching my own podcast on the history of Stardom once I have time to record it and figure out how to get nice recording equipment like you have.
This is like $35 on Amazon, buddy.
I've never even seen this thing. It looks really cool.
Just buy it. Just go look on Amazon for the Blue Stone. It was probably on sales. It was probably a little more expensive.
Usually I call in my past couple times, so yeah. I'm actually getting to see the apparatus at work.
Yeah, it's just a little fucking snowball microphone. It's not that great. But yeah, just go look on Amazon. It's fine.
That's cool.
This is the microphone that I took when I took to Japan with me
so he could do some omakase recording in Japan. Like, they, the guy at the TSA, like, was like, we need to open your bag because we can't figure out what you have in there. And I was like, what? And he's like, yeah, there's something in there. We don't know what it is. And my bag was, like, I was taking a small suitcase because I was doing carry-on for, like, 2 weeks in Japan. So my bag was fucking stuffed.
Yeah.
So having to open it up and, like, pull this thing out. And he's like, oh, this is the thing. I'm like, it's a microphone. He's like, what do you mean it's a microphone? Like, I mean, it's a microphone. He's like, well, where do you talk into it? The part that looks like a fucking microphone is where you talk into it. Like, I don't, they couldn't figure out what this thing was. So then I had to, like, squeeze this fucking suitcase back together and zip it up again in the middle of the fucking, like, the post-security area, all because they didn't know what a fucking microphone looks like. But anyway, like, oh, the other thing was, like, what do you mean it's a microphone for what? I'm like, for a computer. Like, what is so complicated about it? It's not like I'm, if I was bringing just this, maybe I can even understand more the confusion. I had a laptop with me. Like, anyway.
John now bearing the TSA.
Yeah, the TSA can blow me. Let's wrap this up. Please don't put me on a no-fly list. Anyway, we should wrap this up by plugging the Hyrule Castle Party, March 31st at Gateway. You want to see some 12-year-olds in Zelda cosplay? If not, then you just can follow us on Twitter at WrestleOmakase, not wrestling, because it doesn't fit. And you can follow me on Twitter at Tushanshu in LA, which I'm never going to spell, so just...
Well, for once, you're actually in LA.
Oh, yeah, I am in LA, that's true. I am in LA, it's true. Oh, no, I'm in Long Beach, buddy.
Yeah, no, that's, well, we were in LA. Well, you were getting in LA. Very, very drunk at karaoke.
I will be back in LA tomorrow for to see the Los Angeles Kings, who just had a huge blow to their playoff hopes because they went out and lost to the sad sack Edmonton Oilers last night, and the Oilers did us
The Oilers are still bad.
Well, yeah, so they weren't bad for so long, and then last year they were finally good and made it, like, all the way to the second round of the playoffs. And so they have one good year in the past, like, 15. And then this year, like, okay, that's enough. Time to go back to sucking. It's like, but yeah, so they beat the Kings last night and then they lost the Ducks tonight, which is, like, a really bad 1-2 punch for the Kings. So hopefully when I'm in attendance tomorrow, the Kings beat the Calgary Flames, who are also very bad, and move on a little closer to making the playoffs. But I don't know. Like, I barely watched hockey this season. I'm just going kind of because I live hockey's still cool, and I'm gonna, you know, I'm here anyway. I figured I'd go, and it's like trying to go to a Rangers game at MSG is like you better rob a bank or something. Like, those tickets are so ridiculous. Like, what I paid for, like, good seats at the Staples Center tomorrow is what you probably can't even get in the door for some games at MSG.
I miss the days of the Nassau Coliseum, me and Quinlan getting second rows for like $10 for Islanders Hurricanes.
Yeah.
That was fun.
I mean, the Islanders tickets at Brooklyn are not that much more expensive now because no one's going to those games either. But anyway, let's wrap this up. Thank you all for listening. I don't know what the show's going to be next week. I'm going straight from my schedule right now is crazy. I'm going flying back to New York on Tuesday. I'm home for all of a day. And I get on a train to Boston on Thursday to go to an anime convention because very on brand. I'm hosting two Japanese pro wrestling panels there, New Japan DET, so that'll be fun. But yeah, so I don't know when I'm going to be able to record a show. We'll figure it out, I guess. I'll have to find a guest. If I can find time to watch Sakura Genesis, maybe we'll do like a Sakura Genesis episode or something. But until then, everybody, thank you all for listening. We'll see you again
soon. Weeabooyah.
Weeabooyah.